Let's begin with the word of prayer. Let's pray. Dear Lord, we come to you this morning. We thank you and praise you that you're with us here. We ask that your spirit would be here and touch our hearts as we talk about various things connected to the classroom. Thank you for each person that's here. We ask you to be with us in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for coming back. Those of you that have been coming to the novice track, those of you that haven't been here before, welcome. I'm glad you're here. You'll see two trivia questions up on the board. I hope you can read them from the back. What is a male swan called, and what does heliophobia mean? And we'll get to those answers at the end. In the Bible, we read a verse that talks about Paul. He says, "Let all things be done decently and in order." Now, he's not talking there about a classroom. He's talking about a church, but the concept is what we're going to be talking about today. We have places in the Bible where it talks about being sober. We have places in the Bible where it talks about being alert and watching and paying attention. Hopefully by the end of this, we'll see the connection between that and the concept of having procedures. How many of you are familiar with the book Cheaper by the Dozen? Most of you are. And you will know that Mr. Gilbreth was an expert at this thing of procedures. Let me read you a little bit about his experience. "Yes, at home or on the job, Dad was always the efficiency expert. He buttoned his vest from the bottom up instead of from the top down because the bottom to top process took him only 3 seconds while the top to bottom took 7. He even used 2 shaving brushes to lather his face because he found that by so doing he could cut 17 seconds off his shaving time. For a while he tried shaving with 2 razors, but he finally gave that up. I can save 44 seconds, he grumbled, but I wasted 2 minutes this morning putting this bandage on my throat. It wasn't the slashed throat that really bothered him, it was the 2 minutes. Whenever Dad returned from a trip, he whistled the family assembly call. As he turned in at the sidewalk of our large brown home in Montclair, he whistled it loud and shrill by doubling his tongue between his front teeth. The call was important. It meant drop everything and come running or risk dire consequences. Dad gave the whistle often. He gave it when he had an important family announcement that he wanted to be sure everyone would hear. He gave it when he was bored and wanted some excitement with his children. He gave it when he had invited a friend home and wanted both to introduce the friend to the whole family and to show the friend how quickly the family could assemble. On such occasions, Dad would click a stopwatch, which he always carried in his vest pocket. Like most of Dad's ideas, the assembly call, while something more than a nuisance, made sense. This was demonstrated in particular one day when a bonfire of leaves in the driveway got out of control and spread to the side of the house. Dad whistled, and the house was evacuated in 14 seconds, 8 seconds off the all-time record. We're talking about procedures. That father had figured out a way to instill procedures in his children. How many of you have ever heard of the Tenerife airport disaster? Is that familiar to any of you? I don't know exactly about the pronunciation of that word, but it's an island, and I forgot to look this up. I think it's in the Caribbean somewhere. But it was the worst aviation disaster in history. And what happened there, just in brief, it was very foggy at the time of the accident, and a bunch of airplanes had been diverted to a small airport on this island because of a terrorist threat at a different airport. And 2 747s were in the process of figuring out how to get out of that airport again, and it was full and there were lots of planes parked where they didn't normally have planes parked. And one 747 began his takeoff roll as another one was still taxiing on the runway, and they couldn't see each other until it was too late. The pilots of the ones of the plane taking off saw the plane on the runway ahead of them, and they pulled back to try to get the plane off the runway, but it wasn't going fast enough yet. And it did get into the air a little bit, but it sliced through the other plane, and 453 people died or something. It was an awful disaster. Part of the reason why they say there was that accident is because the pilots and the controllers were not using the procedures that they should have been using in communicating. a little bit that I found about that. The disaster had a lasting influence on the industry, talking about the airline industry, highlighting in particular the vital importance of using standardized phraseology in radio communications. Cockpit procedures were also reviewed, contributing to the establishment of crew resource management as a fundamental part of airline training, airline pilots' training. So that's a situation where procedures, lack of procedures, had terrible consequences. Just for the record, this thing of procedures is as old as the Bible. If you don't believe me, try reading through Leviticus and some of those Old Testament books where God outlines in explicit detail how the Israelites were to follow procedures of sacrifice, worship, marriage, lots of things. And if it interests you, you may want to read what the consequences were if they didn't. It was a lot more serious than what we take it sometimes when we're thinking about God's laws and following them. So, our title, Procedures for Managing a Multi-Grade Classroom. Does that word managing scare you? Does the word procedures scare you? It may not. But I do want you to realize that as a first-year teacher, especially, you're going to be called to manage time in a way that you never have before, and in a way that might leave you feeling very, very unsure of how to proceed. And we're going to look at some procedures today that, Lord willing, will help you in that, managing time. If I asked each one of you, you probably could give me a name of a person in your life that you consider a good time manager. Probably. But I want to tell you that that time management does not come naturally to people. And even the people in your life that you admire as being able to manage their time well, you probably had to do a lot of working at that to become good time managers. There's a one word that describes that. It's a hyphenated word, so it's two words put together. But does anybody know what I'm talking about? That sounded like the right beginning. Self-control, self-discipline, that's what I was thinking of. So I want you all to make it a goal of yours in this year to get to learn how to manage time. Ask the people that you look up to as time managers, what do you do to get your time to be managed? Just as a little side note, my brother told me that somebody once gave him a list of things that a teacher must do each school day and the amount of time it takes. And when you add them all up, it comes up to something like 32 hours every day. And we don't have 32 hours every day. Managing time is important. And it's already been mentioned in this class several times, but God promises that if you ask for help, He will be there to help you. In James, if you ask for wisdom. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you're self-disciplined or not. Maybe it would be more accurate to ask your friends if you're self-disciplined, because sometimes we have a hard time evaluating that in ourselves. But while I'm stepping on all our toes, might as well just grind in a little further and see if we can't talk about a couple things that relate to self-discipline. We read one of the fruits of the Spirit is temperance, and there's a lot of ways in life that we can show temperance. How long we sleep in the mornings, how late we stay up at night, how we spend our money, whether we're on time for things, church services and social activities, how we respond when things don't go our way, how much we eat, what we do in our spare time. We can make a long list of things that connect with self-discipline. Remember, we're talking about procedures. And I also want you to get a tremendous sense of the importance of holiness before God. As you are going into your classrooms, there must be holiness. God requires that. A teacher that I know, who I respect highly, he's been in the classroom much longer than I have, he said that he has seen classrooms fall apart from various things. Lack of management, lack of discipline, things like that. But the most devastating effects he's seen in classrooms is when the teacher is not committed to holiness in his or her personal life. And I can tell you from personal experience that it is horribly damaging to your relationships with your students if you're living a life of hypocrisy and you're hiding things that they don't know about. The devil wants to tell you that what you do in private doesn't matter. But that's a lie, straight from hell. And the sooner you can come to grips with that, the farther along you will be in managing your classroom and having the blessing of God on your classroom, because you need that. We're going to look at procedures in various parts of school life. If you look on your handout, we have different areas here that I have blanks for you to fill in if you care to. And we'll move into that here shortly, but quickly here. Did you write down anything in the little box where it says write down several procedures that you remember from your school days? Let's have three people share something. Just quickly.
Oh, we had a certain way we had to head our papers.
How you had to what?
We had to put the heading on.
Okay, a certain way you had to put the heading on your papers. Good. Another one.
Finger signals for what you were needing from the teacher.
Finger signals for what you were needing from the teacher. Thank you. Another one.
Hall pass to go to the bathroom.
Thank you. Before we talk about specific procedures, let's talk about why we use them. And you'll see in this box right here, you can fill these in as we go. I don't know how it is for you, but we live in a culture that balks against procedures, that just goes against it. The thing of structure, the thing of being told what to do, that does not fit with what people around us do. Everybody likes to do their own thing. Don't tell me what to do because I'm the boss of my life, and just bug off. You may even feel that way in connection with school. You may have had an experience in school where you felt like the teacher was so strict and so caught up on this thing of procedure that you couldn't even enjoy school. You couldn't even do what you felt like you needed to. Maybe you're approaching school with the attitude, it doesn't matter so much, I'm just going to go in there and students will be my friends and just have a good old time. And I hope and pray that your students are your friends, but it must be in the context of procedure and structure. Some reasons why procedures are necessary and important. They are a biblical concept. We talked about that already. They are a biblical concept. Procedures also help to keep a group of people functioning as a unit. Anywhere you go, whether it's the workplace, whether it's a sports team, whether it's just some kind of nonprofit organization, if it's going to work, there must be procedures and there must be people working together. Procedures provide security for your students. They help to lessen confusion. And these are things on your handouts that you're welcome to fill in as we go. We're ready for the fifth one. They allow for more efficient work, which allows more time for necessary things in the classroom. They help to teach the importance of following instructions. Procedures will allow for you to have a little more freedom to be gone if necessity requires that. It's a beautiful thing when you can leave and know that your students will continue to operate as you've been working with them, because they know what the procedure is and they're going to keep doing it even if you're not there. That's a beautiful thing. Much easier said than done. The eighth one, they help to teach discipline that will be needed later in life. Because remember, we're not just there teaching our students because we like being with children, or because we like the social status of being a teacher, or whatever your reasons might be. Those might play into it, but we're trying to prepare them for life. And if they learn how to follow procedures in our classroom, that will be helpful to them later. And the last one, they help to create a safe, secure learning environment. Though that list could be lengthened. But those are some things that came to my mind in thinking about procedures. So I don't know where you're at on this thing. If you are okay with procedures, if you don't like them, But I urge you to ask God to help you in this area. If it's a weakness of yours, even if you feel like you're good at being self-disciplined, ask Him for wisdom. Ask Him for help as you go into this school year. And I was thinking how even Jesus was subjected to some procedures. We don't usually think of going to the cross as a procedure. But if you think about how the sacrificial system worked, there was a lamb that had to be offered for the sins of the people. And Jesus went through that procedure of dying for us, for me and for you. And we know from the Bible that Jesus struggled mightily with that. It was hard for Him. He could hardly take it in His physical body. It was very intense. And so if Jesus struggled with procedures, how much more am I going to? Seek God. He's there, and He will help you. Okay, let's move into the different parts of these procedures. So the way I have this set up, we're going to be doing this set of them, and then this one, and then that one, then that one. So we're going back and forth across the page instead of up and down. The first area we have here is procedures in your personal life. And you might wonder a little bit how that connects with school, because we're not talking, personal life doesn't have anything to do with the classroom, right? But I just want to tell you that if your personal life is lacking procedures, and if it's in shambles and you feel like you just can't live a life that's orderly and with procedures, it's going to transfer into your classroom. If your personal habits are not in order before you go into the classroom, don't expect anything different from your class. Rule number one, and this is the most important rule in this whole class, pray for your students every day. And you've heard that already this week. Pray for them every day, maybe more than once a day. Pray for them by name. If it helps, once they've left for the day, go sit in their chair at their desk and just pray for that particular student. You'll have students that it's easy to pray for because they're fun to be with and they're easy to work with. And you will have students that it's hard to pray for because they're not quite that way. And it's really easy in all the busyness of keeping your classroom going and talking to parents and talking to your co-teachers and checking and teaching. It's really easy to sweep this one under the rug and forget that, I need to be praying for my students. But it must be important. Set a time for yourself that you will not compromise on when you're going to bed each night. Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. And connected with that, set a time when you're going to get up and stick with it. Because the more you fudge on that, the harder it's going to be to keep things orderly. And connected with that as well is get your sleep. I realize that in life there are going to be times when you can't follow those rules, but make it your goal. Read your Bible and pray a lot. Read your Bible and pray a lot. Spend time regularly with peers who aren't connected with school. Remember what I said about you needing 32 hours to get all this stuff done in one 24-hour day? But do this if you can, because it keeps your perspective fresh if you are able to get away from school and connect with your peers. Try to spend time with your students outside of the school setting. You will learn things about them that you never knew before, and that helps you in connecting with them in the classroom. Attend church and social functions. If your church is having revival meetings, your students should see you there every evening. If there's a volleyball game, and you teach upper graders, and you teach youth age students, they should see you there on time. Exercise, if you can, in some way, outside of your normal school activities. It will do you good. And the last one in this section is read. I believe it was Brother Jonah that shared yesterday, you cannot teach out of a vacuum. You can't teach with an empty coffee pot, or if you can't fill a coffee cup with an empty coffee pot. So keep you can't teach either again. Keep your reservoir full, because that will help you in connecting with your students. Next section, preparing for the school year. Procedures in preparing for the school year. Make sure the books are all there that you need for the year. don't just assume that that was all taken care of satisfactorily at the end of last year. It may have been or it may have not been, so pay attention to that. Look over the books you'll be teaching. Scan them. If you can, scan the whole book and kind of try to get a big picture of what you're going to be teaching. Don't hesitate to ask questions of other teachers, especially those who have been there before you, if you're coming into a school and taking someone else's place. There's lots of fountains of wisdom there if you take advantage of them. In your daily planner, plan at least the first week or two of school before you ever first have students set foot in your classroom. Even more, if you feel you need to, plan the first month, plan the first 2 months. Some teachers plan out, get it kind of a yearly plan. That's not something I've done, but they try to get a whole big picture, because when you get down into the day-to-day grind, it's going to be harder to see the big picture, but if you get that set ahead of time, it can be helpful. That's the next point. If it's a help to you, make a work plan for the year. The next one is plan fairly meticulously what you will do on the first day of school. You might want to write down times, like from 10:33 to 10:37, we're going to, I don't know, talk about the capitals of the United States or whatever. But the reason I say that is because I've heard teachers say, we got to the first day of school and I didn't know what to do with them. They got done with all the stuff I had to do, and I wasn't going to do any work that day, but I didn't know what to do because they were just sitting there and I wasn't sure what to tell them to do. Don't be afraid to give them schoolwork on the first day. That's okay. That's good. And the last one in that section is try to learn some things about your students before school, the first day of school arrives. And Brother Jonathan shared about this yesterday, but especially if you're moving into a community where you don't know anybody. And that's going to be hard, but try to learn something about your students before you ever meet them. Procedures during devotions period. Have a schedule for what happens on each day of the week. This past year, on Monday mornings, the students gave me an object, and I would have an object lesson connected with that object. And it was very interesting what they brought. The most unique one was a cow pie, but a frozen cow pie. So, anyway, that's very interesting. Tuesday mornings, we sang together with the whole school. Wednesday mornings was student devotions, where the students planned the devotions. Thursday morning was just an open devotional period when I chose something to do. And Friday mornings we had the dads come in from the church. So that was what we did. And just my point is, have a plan what you're going to do each day for devotions period. Set something as a beginning activity that you do each day. For me, it was every day at the beginning of the day, we just stood up and recited that week's passage of Bible memory. We just did that every morning at the beginning of the day, and it helps to provide structure. Try to include these three things in each devotions period: Bible reading, and prayer, and singing. Try. Recruit students to help during devotions period, because that can help lighten your load. And it's great practice, especially for teenage boys. It's great practice for them if they have to get up and lead a song or even just read a Bible passage. It's great, good for them. Keep your devotions short and practical to the age group you're teaching. One of my friends that teaches, he felt led one time to speak on the subject of personal purity. And that scares me to think about trying to address that subject to my students. It seems kind of uncomfortable, but he felt led to do that. And he found out later that that was very, very beneficial, very, very influential. And I think one of the parents told him that's exactly what they needed. So that's obviously not going to be what you'll talk about if you have first and second graders. But my point is, try to keep your devotions practical to your age group, something that they can connect with. And pray a lot about it, because God will help you in that. End your devotions period with prayer. That's something that I like to do, and that provides a basis or a foundation then as you start into the day. You've had prayer. Procedures in preparing for classes. Know what lesson you're teaching. Do not come to class having read lesson 67 when you're supposed to be teaching lesson 66. It's a terrible feeling. to get to class and realize that you read the wrong lesson. I know that you're perfect and you won't do that ever, but just don't. Just don't. Be familiar with how to do the lesson, especially if it's something you haven't done in a while. If extra items are needed for class, ask your students to bring them. I'm thinking here, especially in science, if you need a jar of peanut butter or some kind of a pancake flipper or something, have the students bring it. It helps to keep them involved, and it's less things for you to keep track of. Look ahead often. Think of practical applications of the lesson in the life of at least one student. If you have a student that lives on a dairy farm and you're learning about farming, well, by all means, include something from his daily life that you can apply to the lesson somewhere. If you can, do outside reading on the subject that you're teaching. If lots of student reading is necessary, and I'm thinking here of a long reading assignment for your students, it might be wise to assign some of that reading ahead of time. Send it home with them and they can spend time reading at home. And try to think of a time in your life when this particular lesson may have applied. Like Jonah said yesterday, your students love to hear about a time when you made a mistake. Or when I tell them that I remember the last spanking I got and why I got it, oh, they love to hear about that. So think about that. Try to apply it to your life, whatever you're teaching. Procedures in conducting classes. We're on the other side of the page now. Require promptness in coming to class. I feel this is something I've done poorly in. I remember hearing of a teacher that had a set amount of seconds, I think it was, like 30 seconds or something, very short, to where the student must be come from their desk and be sit, and they have to be sat down at the class table in 30 seconds or something like that. Don't be afraid to set those things, because you can spend a lot of time with students meandering around, not getting to where they need to be. Make sure your students know clearly what's expected of them in class. And on to the next point, have a policy about talking during class. Make sure they know if you're okay with them just commenting or answering your questions without raising their hands during class, I'm talking about. Make sure they know if you want them to always raise their hand before they talk during class. Review lots. That's the fourth point under this one. Review. The next one, teach the lesson as necessary, but be alert to know how much they already understand, because you don't want to just spend a bunch of time running your mouth when they already have a grasp of it and they're able to do it. And so a way you can do that is the next point, use this a lot. Use this a lot, because that will show you, like we heard this morning, Brother Howard was sharing, it'll show you where the weaknesses are. It's very helpful. And another way you can do that is to ask lots of questions to your students as you're teaching, because you can pick up on whether they understand what you're saying or not. We're ready for the second to last point in this one. Require some board work from students if the lesson includes it. That connects with the one of the previous ones. And class time is also a good time to practice oral reading. Procedures in recess. Make sure it is clear whether during your recess times it's going to be a time when everyone is allowed to choose what they want to do, whether they want to swing or whether they want to play ball or whether they want to play soccer, or whether you're going to have a structured time where Arthur picks a game and everybody plays that game. It's up to you. There's not one right way to do it, but just make sure your students know how recess is going to be conducted. Require prompt selection of the game and require prompt participation in the game. My brother told me he was having problems with the young ladies not coming out to play the game in time, and so he finally resorted to setting a timer. I think it was for 3 minutes or 2 minutes. But if they were not out playing the game by the time that timer rang, then there was consequences. So do things like that if you're having a problem with getting people out there. You play too! !! You play. Help your students play. They will love it, because there's nothing greater than catching the teacher when you're playing a running game. Game committees can be useful. You can talk to Paul Bear about this one. I've never tried a game committee, but I remember him telling me that he did. And the game committee was in charge of choosing games for the week. The game committee was in charge if there was a new game. They explained the rules, and they made sure the game got started. Of course, this is all under the supervision of the teacher, but it can take a lot off of you if you're able to implement something like that. Have a clear signal when recess begins and when recess ends. If you want to ring a bell, if you want to snap your fingers, if you want to just say you're dismissed, just make sure they know the signal for when it's time to go out and when it's time to come in. Use timers. Timers are wonderful things. They're so, you can't argue with them. When they ring, then you're done. It's so wonderful. The last point in this section, require a prompt return to seats after recess. In my classroom, the policy is you have 2 minutes from the time I say it's time to go in till you're sitting in your desk or standing by your desk, and you're not allowed to talk when you come back in the classroom. I mean, without raising your hand. As soon as you come in the door, then all the talking rules apply. That was an idea I got from Bing, and I love it because it eliminates the whole thing of a bunch of jabber in the classroom at the end of recess, and you're there trying to say, okay, guys, it's time to be quiet now. If they know what to expect, you can save time there. Procedures in study time. Require a quiet classroom. Require a signal from you before the student is allowed to talk out loud. And I'm thinking, I mean, the normal one is if they raise their hand, then make sure they know that you must acknowledge them before they start talking. Have a system for how the student decides in which order he or she will do her subjects or his subjects. And this is up to you how you handle it, but the reason I say this is because there are students that they'll always put off a certain subject to the end because they don't like that subject, and that's always the one they take home for homework, and that then you have a backlog of grades that you can't get because they always have their notebook at home. You get the picture. Try to give them a method of getting their work done in a timely manner, and you might even have to tell them, okay, you are going to now work on math for 15 minutes, and then you're going to work on English for 10 minutes. You might not have to get that detailed, but it's okay if you do sometimes. Make a policy that only one person may be out of their desk at a time. This just helps eliminate a bunch of people milling around the classroom because that's terribly distracting. Limit how much a student is allowed to go in and out of the classroom during work time. Answer questions, but be alert to time-wasting questions. Oh, you can get into such wonderful discussions during class time or during study time where you're talking about something interesting and this hand pops up, and it's great. I love those, but I don't like how it takes away so much work time and then there's so much homework. So use your discretion in that. That is part of what keeps school alive and interesting are those types of spontaneous discussions, but they can also be a tremendous time waster. You can try setting an amount of time when there will be no questions. And so the thought here is you say, okay, everyone, I'm going to set the timer for 15 minutes, and in those 15 minutes, I will not answer questions. You will just sit at your desk and work, and I will sit at my desk and work or watch you or whatever. But no questions. It's great. You should try it if you haven't already. Procedures in disciplining. The best part, right? Oh, no? Really? Disciplining. The first thing I would say in this is seek God's direction in this and pray a lot about it. Fast about it even if you're feeling unsure of whether you're taking the right steps. Remember that you're looking for the bigger picture. You're doing this to try to help the student in life. You're not necessarily just punishing the fact that they talked because they didn't, before they raised their hand. Be consistent. That's the second point on that section. Be consistent. And I will tell you that's hard. It's terribly hard. But do it anyway. Make rules only after you've thought them through. Don't make spur-of-the-moment rules. That's dangerous. Because as soon as you make a rule, then you are required to enforce it. And that, for me personally, is one reason why I don't like making rules, because I just know that at some point my consistency is going to be tested and I'm going to have to decide whether how I'm going to respond and how I'm going to be consistent. But make rules. Go ahead and make rules. That is part of your job. It's okay. Talk to parents sooner rather than later. Keep them informed. And a side note on that, it is okay to send a parent a text and say, your student did wonderfully today. You're going to be much more quick to send a text that said, oh, he was late for recess, or he got a 70 on his math, or my point is, it's easy to focus on the negatives. Don't be afraid to send a positive message to the parents. Do that because it'll help you in the relationships. Deal with the problem and then move on. That's the next point. Watch and wait if you're not sure about something, because if it's a real problem, it will come up again. It will come up again. That kind of connects with don't make spur-of-the-moment rules. Don't overreact. Just try to keep the surface calm, like Jonathan said, like the duck swimming. Keep your outer calm, even though underneath you're going like this and you're not sure what to do. Get help. Contact the school board. Another suggestion I was given is call 1-800-JONATHAN-ERB. I don't think he's in here, but there are people like that that love to help, and they have experience and they know. They have good advice. Talk to your dad. Do what you must, but talk to someone who you can trust about these things. Because if you keep it all bottled up inside you, there's going to be an explosion at some point, and it just hopefully it isn't directed at your students. One of my co-teachers, his theory is that, I don't know if this is really a theory, but he likes to talk about it, that if there's a lot of little tremors in the earth, this is thinking about the earth's crust, if there's a lot of little tremors, that keeps the earthquakes from happening. But the problem is, when those tremors stop, and something there's pressure that starts building, and all of a sudden they move, and then there's this gigantic earthquake. So the point is, it's okay if there's tremors. Keep the little things happening. But don't keep it all bottled up inside you, because at some point there's going to be a great shaking of the earth. You may consider some kind of demerit or detention system. And again, talk to other teachers who have done this, especially ones who have had experience, because they can tell you some things that work and some things that don't. And be consistent in that. Procedures for teacher checking. I'm talking about checking papers or books at the end of the school day after the students have left. Organize your stack of books before you start checking, because that will save you time. Talk to Jonah about this. He has some pretty good ideas about being efficient and checking a lot of books in a short amount of time. I got the suggestion recently to have your students hand in their books open to the lesson that they just did, rather than closing them before they hand them in. I've never tried that. I might this next year, but it just saves you that little bit of time that it takes to open up the book and find the lesson. You may try setting aside a designated amount of time in the afternoon for checking. So you say, I'm going to check from 4 to 5, and that's it. I'm not going to just spend 3 hours this afternoon checking. I'm just going to check then and see what we get done at the end of that time. Turn your phone off while checking. Ooh. Maybe. You don't need to. Maybe you're not tempted with that. But if this is sitting on my desk and it goes bzz, 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 it is terribly hard to keep my mind on what I'm doing. Even if it's on silent and I can't hear anything, but I see the screen light up and I see I got some kind of a notification, it's still terribly hard to not look at it. And it's terribly hard to keep yourself on task. For me, it's helpful just to either turn it off or turn it on silent and put it far enough away, or turn it upside down or something to where I just can't see it. There still is the temptation there, and you have to deal with that in your own heart. But next section, procedures for checking in class. Have a system for who checks which book. And I mean by that, make sure your students know if they're going to check their own while you read the answers, or if you're going to switch books to the left, or if you're going to switch books to the right, or across the table, or however you want to have it set up. Have a designated color of pen for marking wrong answers, and require close attention from them. This is something I'm still learning, and I haven't figured it out yet, but again, talk to people who know what they're doing in this area and have done it a lot, because they can give you tips. Read answers without stopping for questions. Read down through all the answers. Don't allow them to say, oh, what about, oh, because you won't get through the checking very fast. Answer questions at the end. And if it's becoming a terrible time waster, you may want to set a time limit and say, okay, we're going to check for 5 minutes and we better be done. If we're not done, then I'll check the rest of it myself, or you guys can stay in at recess or whatever. Procedures for free time. I've heard students say, teachers, they just get this terrible feeling when there's a student sitting there at their desk, they're done, and they don't know what to do next. And they might start drumming their fingers, they might start bugging their neighbor, or they might start just looking at you expectantly. It'll vary what they do, but that is a bad feeling because it's just not comfortable. So some suggestions, you may have them read. You may have them create something artful. I have one student that is tremendous at drawing pictures, like log trucks and machinery. Oh, it's so amazing. He's just got this fine detail, and he draws them. Find those things in your students, because they do have abilities that you might not see yet firsthand. Artful is such a general word. That could be a picture, that could be painting, that could be creating something by folding paper, it could be making a card for somebody, which goes with the next, or the second one after the next one. Study their Bible memory. And if you've got a system like Howard has, they might do that anyway when they are trying to learn their 1,200 verses. Write someone a note of encouragement. Look over their work. Or organize their desk. Those are all very valid things they can do during their free time. Some of them will do them without you telling them. Some of them won't. Some other miscellaneous procedures. Read books about teaching. Brother Jonathan had the first days of school in here yesterday. That has a lot of stuff in it. I'm currently reading a book called Teaching to Change Lives. There's the book, The Seven Laws of Teaching, that Jonathan's going to be talking about. The book, Teach Like Your Hair's on Fire. My personal opinion is that it's good to read those as you go through your teaching, because it helps to keep the inspiration fresh. Gives you ideas. Talk to other teachers. Attend midterm teachers' meetings if you have the opportunity. I love those times. For one thing, it's a time when you get to sit and allow others to teach you, and you also get to be with others who understand what you deal with in the classroom. It just is amazingly inspirational. If something isn't working, change it. Keep your school board in the loop. There shouldn't be things happening at school that the school board is like, oh, that happened. I never knew that. Just keep that in mind. Because sometimes, with the last point, they can give you objective opinions on stuff that you can't do yourself because you're so connected to the situation. Now, question for Jonah. You always follow all these procedures in your classroom, right?
Why do the question?
You always follow all these procedures in your classroom, right?
No.
Isn't that discouraging? No, it doesn't need to be discouraging. We've talked about a lot of things in these 45 minutes. And I just want you to do your best with them. Don't go in there and try to implement all these and go into depression when they're not working. Don't do that. That's not going to be profitable. Keep this paper, and you may look at it throughout the school year and say, oh yes, that was an idea I wanted to try. But don't try to do more than you can, because you have to be alert to reality. And reality says that a teacher is busy. A teacher needs 32 hours for a 24-hour day. A teacher will have to let some things go that can't be fit in. But aim high. Keep your expectations high, and that'll go a long ways. So, use procedures. The takeaway from the class, practice procedures in your classroom. You won't regret it. You won't regret it. Modify the procedures as you go. Make them work, because we're going to be teaching in a lot of different settings, and some things won't work in some settings and some things will. So keep that in mind. Don't believe that you're the exception to the rule that doesn't need procedures. Don't let yourself go down that road. So I wish you God's richest blessings in that as you navigate those waters. dodge the icebergs and do whatever you need to do. And again, at the end of this, I want to just emphasize, pray a lot. Because remember, God will honor that. And He has promised that those who pray will get an answer. Pray a lot. Because you're making history every day in the classroom. You're making history. So remember what we said at the beginning, how procedures are connected to being alert and sober and watchful. That's the way. That's your goal for your classroom. You want to be alert to what's happening. You want to be watchful. You want to be sober and keep these procedures as much as possible. Thank you for your attention. Now, who wants to tell me what a male swan is called? I did already. Thank you. Look it up. A cob. A male swan is called a cob. Anybody know what heliophobia would be?
Fear of sunlight.
Yeah, fear of the sun. Fear of the sun. Thank you for your attention. You're dismissed.